one of the things that I thought was rather interesting, I can't remember his name, the gentleman who just wrote the book called On Bended Knee, which is about the American press and the Reagan administration, and you can see what his particular thesis statement is when you think about the title, On Bended Knee. He talked about the fact, he was being interviewed on National Public Radio the other day, and he was talking about the fact that basically everything that was in the Iran-Contra case had appeared in the newspapers for a couple of years, off and on, in the New York Times, in the Washington Post, and various other media outlets, and it was all there, and everybody was afraid to go after the Reagan administration. And then he also mentioned, of course, the fact that they didn't really go after the Reagan administration even during the Iran-Contra case. But again, just putting a bringing a circle to what Dave was saying a few minutes ago, this is all stuff that's out there. This is not, as some people might think when you hear people talking about the kind of broadcast we do, this is not strange and arcane theories that we're putting together, and any theories that we come up with are stated as just that, theories. But it's basically a huge raft of documented information that's in the public sector. It's there for people to find. It's in the national news outlets. It's in books. It's in magazines. It's just that most people don't or can't take the time to put it together, and that's what the archive services are, an attempt to put it in one place to tell you what our conclusions are, but to leave you perfectly free, as you ought to be, to make up your own mind.
Yeah, again, increasingly, I think if people really want to grasp the essence of what we're doing on One Step Beyond, an acquisition and awareness of the archives is awfully important and increasingly important. I think if you really want to get out of this program, what you can get out of it, the archive shows are really a must, because so many of the real solid references are, by of necessity, abbreviated during the course of One Step Beyond. We really can't go into every connection in as much detail as it might be required in order to convince the newly acquainted person with the material who is of necessity skeptical, because this is different than what they're accustomed to thinking. So the archive shows, I think, in particular for those of you who would be inclined to criticize, I think it is incumbent on anyone who wants to criticize an argument to familiarize themselves with it at first. So archive shows is the message. Tape and learn to the maximum extent possible. Also, I think those of you who are interested in improving the state of things could perhaps take a note from American history and sort of think of yourselves as, if not necessarily committees of correspondence, perhaps committees of chromium dioxide. The committees of correspondence during the American War of Independence were groups of people who got together and communicated with other groups of people, people who favored independence for the 13 colonies, and they had sort of an underground literary political society, and people can, given the technology that's available today, people can use some of the very inexpensive tape duplicators, yet effective tape duplicators, to copy tapes off the air and send them to people in cities where the broadcasts are not aired. So something people can do to boost the archives to their acquaintances. We're going to be talking this evening about some links between the past and the present. We're going to be talking about an organization called the Defense Industrial Security Command. That's what it was called in 1963, when elements of it figured prominently in the assassination of John Kennedy. It is now called the Defense Investigative Service. This is the organization, and it's very, very secretive, that provides the security clearances for people who work in the defense industry. According to a number of researchers who have looked into it, it is far more than that, and literally serves as a fusion of organized crime and the U.S. National Security Establishment, the military and intelligence services, and has been involved in a prominent way not only in big-time drug trafficking, but also the systematic assassination of much of America's progressive leadership, notably the Kennedy brothers and Martin Luther King.
Just a little liberal arts note here of interest. As we mentioned, the Defense Industrial Security Command has gone from being DISC, DISC, to DIS. Interestingly enough, DIS, DIS, is in classical mythological terms is another name for hell. So we can make of that what we will.
One of the reasons that we study, one of the major topics of this broadcast is this country's political assassinations, and one of the reasons we study them as thoroughly and repeatedly as we do is that essentially on November 22nd, 1963, although mainstream American intellectual culture has not properly recorded it, a profound event occurred in this country, which was literally a coup d'etat of an explicitly fascist nature. The military and intelligence services had had enough of John Kennedy's peacemaking, both actual and proposed, and simply decided that they were no longer going to take a back seat to the civilian portion of our government, as Douglas MacArthur had been forced to do, and basically they overthrew it. Kennedy was in the process of pulling us out of Vietnam. He was in the process of normalizing relations with Castro's Cuba, which was going to be moving toward a truly unaligned status. Although it is nominally unaligned today, it is obviously a close ally of the Soviet Union. Kennedy had been moving in a lot of other directions as well, was proposing to break up the CIA into 1,000 pieces in his second administration, and had worked out the first substantive arms control agreement in history with the Soviet Union, namely the Atmospheric Test Ban Treaty, which had occurred in August of 1963. He infuriated not only American munitions makers, but also the old boys from Peenemünde by proposing joint space exploration with the Soviet Union, something we now see being proposed today. There actually was a joint flight in the 70s. However, in 1963, that was anathema. And for that, those and other reasons, the National Security Establishment disposed of John F. Kennedy. Assassinations and near assassinations have dominated American politics ever since. We have only to go back to 1980 to see the shooting of Allard Lowenstein, the killing of Allard Lowenstein, which affected the Democratic primary campaign, which seriously weakening and no doubt intimidating Ted Kennedy, who was challenging Jimmy Carter. We also saw the curious death of Nelson Rockefeller, eliminating the only serious opposition that Ronald Reagan figured to see from within the Republican Party, the quote liberal unquote wing of the Republican Party. Shortly after Reagan was elected, of course, an American, a former member of the American Nazi Party named John Hinckley, the Hinckley family having strong connections to the Bush family, shot President Reagan. Of course, had President Reagan died, George Bush would have become the most powerful man in the United States. The fact of the matter is, in 1972, as we saw with our program about the shooting of George Wallace, serious primary opposition or eventual third-party opposition, I should say, to Richard Nixon was eliminated by gunfire. Although we don't know precisely who shot George Wallace, we do know it certainly wasn't Arthur Bremer. The paraffin tests were negative. Therefore, the official version of history, as it is with our other assassinations, is a readily demonstrable lie. 1968 was perhaps the most dramatic, where the assassinations first of Martin Luther King and then of Robert Kennedy completely eliminated the significant progressive leadership in this country at that time. There were other leaders, some of them extremely talented, but none of that stature, and essentially the big three at that point was gone. John Kennedy's elimination just before the beginning of 1964, of course, having eliminated him. But the same institutions which have given us all of these blasts from the past, and I mean that quite literally, are still very much on the scene. In another archive show, which is available from Archives on Audio, the role of the death of Willie Velazquez, an absolutely monumental American Latino leader, was evaluated against the background of this country's political assassinations. I myself, and it was proposed in that broadcast, which is actually a composite of two programs, that Velazquez's death, Velazquez being the head of the Southwest Voter Registration and Education Project and a prospective Dukakis campaign manager, Willie Velazquez died of galloping cancer shortly before the end of the primary campaign. This seriously, in the eyes of the Dukakis campaign, weakened their prospects in California and Texas in particular, and it was then felt that the selection of Lloyd Benson as a vice presidential nomination compensated for the damage of the loss of Willie Velazquez in Texas. Inasmuch as the National Security Establishment has, as a matter of record, had the ability to give people cancer since 1954, we know this from Freedom of Information Act documents, and I think it can be safely assumed that 30 years plus of medical technology have made those means far more sophisticated today. The death by galloping cancer of Willie Velazquez, I think, is to be examined as a possible political assassination, and, in my opinion, was a key element in the political maneuvering which put Lloyd Benson right behind Michael Dukakis. Although Dukakis has encountered a lot of flack during the campaign for not being liberal enough, who knows what it is exactly that he's going to do should he get elected. Should also be remembered that 1988 is not 1968, and that anyone who wants to get elected today is going to have to at least assuage the fears of the huge, huge defense constituency in this country, not just the military themselves, but the large numbers of Americans who, under Ronald Reagan, have basically been put to work in sort of a military Keynesian program, basically the same sort of government jobs program which liberals had espoused, except instead of being done in the private sector, it was done through the military. 54 cents of every dollar now goes to the military, and America has been turned in 8 years from the world's greatest creditor nation to the world's biggest debtor nation to finance this military buildup. Should Michael Dukakis, once elected president, if he gets elected, prove to be what John Kennedy was, someone who, although campaigning on a national security platform, actually turned out to be a peacemaker, this will not sit well with the people who make their money from weapons, and it will not sit well from the people who get their kicks out of using those weapons. We're going to take a look at Lloyd Bentsen, the man who sits behind Michael Dukakis, and his connections with an organization which one doesn't hear much about, but one should hear a great deal about, namely what used to be called the Defense Industrial Security Command. It is now the Defense Investigative Service, an organization elements of which figured prominently, according to a document we've used in the past, in the John F. Kennedy assassination, and according to that document, they also affected the assassinations of John and Robert Kennedy. We're going to take a look at Lloyd Bentsen's connections to the Defense Industrial Security Command, something about the nature of that organization, and we also, incidentally, will touch on its campaign financing of a former grade B movie actor who went on to become, I'm told, governor of California, someone named Reagan.
That's right. Nobody ever heard of him again.
Yeah, I guess after becoming governor of California, he no longer felt ambitious enough to pursue further office.
Well, it was obviously a fluke he got that far. We're going to read a short segment here from a book entitled Forgive My Grief, Volume 4. Forgive My Grief, the series of books, come from the pen of, well, literally, of Penn Jones, Jr. Penn Jones, Jr. was the editor of a small East Texas newspaper called the Midlothian Mirror. Penn Jones was one of the first people to stand up and say, we're getting jobbed by the Warren Commission and by the investigation into the John F. Kennedy assassination, and it just ain't so. And he spent a large portion of the rest of his time as editor-in-chief of the Midlothian Mirror investigating and printing the results of his investigations on the Kennedy assassination, and they have been compiled as the Forgive My Grief series.
Also, he had a newsletter for many years called The Continuing Inquiry, and for those who would like to read more about Penn as an individual, there's a biography of him called Citizen's Arrest, and I believe the author's last name is Nash. You may be able to dig that up.
This particular section is subtitled Munitions Maker's Secret Police Agency Supplies $6 Million to Bentsen. It's dated April 9th of 1970. Munition Maker's Secret Police Agency Supplies $6 Million to Bentsen. And this, of course, B-E-N-T-S-E-N, Lloyd Bentsen, is who is being talked about here. The Defense Industry Security Command, again, DISC, D-I-S-C, now known as D-I-S, highly secret police agency of the U.S. munitions makers, has taken over $6 million of the American people's tax money and funneled it into the most lavish campaign ever recorded for Benson's Senate race. Defense Industrial Security Command is the most undemocratic, dangerous, and unauthorized secret police of every weapons supplier to the Pentagon, with national headquarters at 3990 East Broad Street, Columbus, Ohio. Defense Industrial Security Command, or DISC, is the vehicle which ties each separate munitions and weapons supplier together as a national cartel similar to the Krupps of Germany. And, of course, for those of you who haven't heard that before, K-R-U-P-P, the Krupp family was the munitions family cartel of Germany before both world wars and right on through. Continuing in Penn Jones, Bentsen is giving, among other things, in exchange for the $6 million, by constantly blasting all the, quote, peaceniks in his campaign. The funneling of the prodigious funds to Lloyd Benson's campaign chest is made through the various foundations revealed as CIA conduits during the mid-1960s. Later, the funds will be broken into smaller amounts and attributed as having been donated by numerous corporate officers in Texas. The threatening secret security organization, DISC, is supervised and controlled by the management of the huge corporations manufacturing weapons of sudden violent death, the Defense Intelligence Agency, or DIA, the Central Intelligence Agency, CIA, and the Espionage Division of the FBI. The Mafia and the Gambling Syndicate are a major force in the operation of DISC through their controlling ownership in a number of the major death-dealing munitions corporations. Bentsen came off the board of directors of Lockheed, one of the largest munitions and supplies contractors, with a fat supply of cash in hand, and promptly began the most expensive campaign ever experienced, even in Texas, where Disk had previously furnished cash to John Connally and lesser amounts to other favored candidates. Ralph Yarborough was puzzled as to the source of such unlimited funds, but he is suspicious of the unprecedented cash and is inquiring. Yarborough and his supporters were completely unaware of the secret police agency funds because of the cloak-and-dagger operations on U.S. soil. They find it hard to believe that such a sinister force is operational, and much less against them. Ralph Yarborough, by the way, was the person who was running against Benson for Senate. The Defense Industrial Security Command has been in force for at least 15 years and has been the source of campaign funds for congressional candidates favoring weapons supply companies and the Pentagon before. Disk is also furnishing campaign cash for Ronald Reagan in California this year, among others. Make no mistake, Disk and its supervisors is the most powerful and dangerous domestic secret police agency to ever threaten a democratic society. And Benson is criticizing Yarborough for using his senatorial aides in his campaign. This could be a device to take the people's mind off of Benson's $6 million munitions cartel fund. On April 7, 1970, the Disk was first publicly tied to the assassination of President Kennedy. News bulletins revealed suit had been filed in California to force the National Archives to open documents suppressed by J. Edgar Hoover. In the suit, it was revealed that Lee Harvey Oswald called collect to a top agent of the Defense Industrial Security Command in Raleigh, North Carolina. The agency was described as an employee of the Federal Counterintelligence Organization. So, Penn Jones here is talking about, obviously, a 1970 Senate campaign, but as so often the case here, there is no past. It's all just a lead-up to what's going on right now. Lloyd Benson, it is common knowledge, does not share Michael Dukakis' political views on a number of subjects. As a matter of fact, so much so that the Republicans have tried to make a campaign point out of saying, you know, how come Democratic president and vice presidential candidates don't even agree with each other on all these major issues, notably among them support to the Contras, which Lloyd Benson has supported and Michael Dukakis has been publicly opposed to. Now, for those of you out there who are faint of heart, we're not necessarily suggesting that Lloyd Benson is directly in line to, knowing that Michael Dukakis, if elected, is going to be bumped off. We can't go that far, obviously. But certainly, people in the know, people who feel themselves to be the true masters of American politics, know that Lloyd Benson is certainly going to be a lot more sympathetic, just as Lyndon Johnson was, to their program, should he happen through some odd eventuality to come to office, should anything happen to an elected Mike Dukakis.
I think the key terms here are damage control and contingency planning. Also, perhaps networking, our favorite word, a word that perhaps the public would do well to substitute for conspiracy, because really the word conspiracy carries a very negative and frivolous connotation, but everyone knows about networking. That's what yuppies do. Well, that's what I do. Oh, well, yes, of course, they say. So a good way of representing that. Now, the key points in that article are that the Defense Industrial Security Command, as it was known then, the Defense Investigative Service, as it's known now, is an organization of the federal government, yet it is very secretive. One does not hear about it because it is involved with the physical security of the munitions industry and related organizations such as NASA and the Atomic Energy Commission. Just as significantly, it is riddled and inextricable with organized crime, and in particular what is known as the Syndicate. That is the National Organized Crime Consortium, first forged by Meyer Lansky, in which the Mafia, the Cosa Nostra, among other and more important American organized crime institutions have been forged into really what amounts to a national organized crime monopoly. Many people use the term syndicate and mafia interchangeably. That is a serious error. The Mafia, or Cosa Nostra, is only one element, and by far and away, certainly there are many more important elements of the Syndicate. But that the Syndicate has penetrated the defense industry and the munitions makers to a large extent. This has given it active participation in the Defense Investigative Service, or DISC as it was known at that time. Now, that is the organization which, as we're going to see, provided large elements to the John F. Kennedy assassination. It also, again, is the organization that essentially underwrote Lloyd Benson's first campaign, and in light of his involvement with the Lockheed Corporation, one of the major backers of DISC, Lloyd Benson certainly would appear to be it would appear that his selection was not accidental or capricious. Now, research credit for the following article goes to May Brussel, the top researcher in this field. Unfortunately, May is near death at this moment from a fast-acting case of cancer. A lot of people have some questions about that. In recent conversations with May, she's dying at the moment, I had not had a chance to speak about research with her this summer while she was undergoing chemotherapy. However, in one of our last visits, we talked briefly about some of the things that have been going on. And May, I talked about the death of Willie Velasquez and my view of his death as an assassination, which helped set Lloyd Benson up behind Michael Dukakis. The connection that we're talking about now is certainly the last connection that is going to be provided to us from Mae Brussel as a living human being. Her research is going to be turned into a foundation, and all of the work that we have in the past we will continue to rely on, certainly, and her tapes as well. However, as a living person, I think this is reflective of the significance of May's work. It was she that provided me with the information concerning Lloyd Benson. It's been a long time since I'd read the Hudson Valley Chronicle article that I'm about to read you. But again, the significance of May's work, I think, is reflected in this very important connection. Nobody else has discussed the significance of Lloyd Benson's connections to the national security establishment and elements in particular that have been involved in our assassinations. Again, research credit to Mae Brussel. This is from the Hudson Valley Chronicle, Volume 1, Number 1, from July of 1977. It's an article by David Wemple, W-E-M-P-L-E, headlined, King Assassination Conspiracy Revealed. This concerns the Robert Byron Watson affidavit. We discussed this particular article, and we excerpted it in Radio Free America program number 8 about the assassination of Martin Luther King. Now, Robert Byron Watson was a fellow who was working at the Magellan Art Gallery in Georgia, just outside of Atlanta, and he specifically came across elements of the plot to kill Dr. Martin Luther King. He linked the assassination of Dr. King with what he called a syndicate, which was involved not only with drug trafficking, but gold bullion smuggling as well. Perhaps more ominously, this syndicate was inextricably linked with the U.S. national security establishment, namely the military and the intelligence communities, and in turn appeared to represent, as many of its members themselves boasted, a government within a government. It had documented ties to ultra-right-wing organizations such as the John Birch Society, and as we're going to see, it may very well have intersected with the Defense Industrial Security Command. Recalling, by way of review, a little bit about what the syndicate that David Wemple is talking about here is, reading now from the Hudson Valley Chronicle, the operations into which Robert Byron Watson gradually became involved through this blackmail brought him an ever-increasing knowledge of organized crime and its relationship to the U.S. federal government. Although deeply involved in narcotics-related activities, he steadfastly maintains that he never took an active role in the actual trafficking, and that any evidence, unquote, of this has been fabricated in a successful attempt to have him framed and imprisoned for the knowledge which he possesses. His awareness of drug smuggling activities, however, is substantial. While visiting Southeast Asia and purchasing huge amounts of artifacts for sale at Magellan's, for instance, he noticed that his traveling companion, Bill Jackson, was buying large quantities of teak logs. They were hollowed out at points and filled with narcotics and shipped back to the United States. A good deal of this information was forwarded by Watson to Atlanta Public Safety Commissioner A. Reginald F. Eaves, E-A-V-E-S. Eaves, whose conscience forced him to launch an investigation of Watson's charges in the summer of 1975, conscience in quotes, conceded that his drug-related data, at least, has proven to be, quote, about 95% accurate, unquote. The leads which Watson has provided in regards to the intimacy between government and syndicate, as well as about their involvement in political assassinations, therefore may well be something to be reckoned with. And one of the interesting elements of this syndicate, which according to the affidavit of Robert Byron Watson, which has been largely confirmed by all of the people who have honestly investigated it, among the people involved with the syndicate, in addition to Lloyd Benson, was the late Representative Larry McDonald, national head of the John Birch Society and the right-wing intelligence organization Western Goals, who died in the KAL 007 provocation.
Okay, continuing. This is under the subheading, Watson is set up. It was also on this journey with Bill Jackson that a comment was made to Watson, which will later become significant, that, quote, President Kennedy was killed because he was conspiring with the communists, unquote. Interestingly, Jackson was indicating not that, quote, pro-communist Oswald had been the assassin, but rather that the assassination was a retaliatory move by reactionary elements within the United States itself. Virtually all of the available evidence points to this very scenario. One example of this concerns the ultra-right links through groups such as the John Birch Society and Minutemen. Not only Larry McDonald, but nearly all of the Magellan partners and their associates were active and influential members of the John Birch Society, and asked Byron if he wanted to join up. He was told by Herman Ballard, alias Herman Jackson, that the paramilitary right not only have secret caches of arms and munitions in every state, but that he could personally visit a hidden practice range and become familiar in the use of automatic weapons, machine guns, grenades, bazookas, artillery rockets, and plastic explosives, quote, just in case the commies or niggers should get out of hand, unquote.
And again, by way of illustrating the ultra right-wing connections to this particular organization and the apparent knowledge about the John F. Kennedy assassination that they maintained. Again, it's interesting to reflect on that last paragraph against the background of the Rex 84 martial law contingency plan as set forth by the Sheehan affidavit of the Christic Institute. Skipping down in the Hudson Valley Chronicle article, this next long section here is going to talk about a number of interesting points. The author, David Wemple, is going to compare many of the aspects of Robert Byron Watson's testimony, or his affidavit, his deposition, with what is known about the Defense Industrial Security Command, or Defense Investigative Service, and its involvement, as it's known today, and its involvement in this country's political assassinations. In particular, we're going to deal with some interesting connections between the John Kennedy assassination and the assassination of Martin Luther King, some connections between people involved in both, or apparently involved in both events, and we're going to take a look at some interesting coincidences, items which in One Step Beyond / Radio Free America parlance would be called food for thought and grounds for further research. Some interesting degrees, some interesting coincidences and overlapping between, again, the information provided by Byron Watson and what is known about the Defense Industrial Security Command. Returning to the Martin Luther King assassination conspiracy revealed from the Hudson Valley Chronicle, 7 July of 1977. Many of Byron Watson's statements, almost certainly without his full awareness, fit a conspiratorial scenario described in a private research document entitled Nomenclature of an Assassination Cabal. I would interrupt. This was something that we used in Guns of November program number 4. That was published, or it was issued, under the pen name of William Torbit, T-O-R-B-I-T-T, although it's not mentioned here. William Torbit was the nom de plume for a lawyer named David Copeland, K-O-P-L-A-N-D, who lived in Texas and was an associate of many of the people who were involved in the assassination and wrote under that name. Incidentally, a political conservative, although not a fascist or reactionary, as these people were. Continue, we're actually beginning again at the beginning of this section. Many of Byron Watson's statements, almost certainly without his full awareness, fit a conspiratorial scenario described in a private research document entitled Nomenclature of an Assassination Cabal. In this manuscript, author William Torbit describes the highly secret security force for the nation's defense contractors and munitions makers, the Defense Industrial Security Command, or DISC. According to Torbit, the major political assassinations in recent American history have involved elements of the DISC and its two oversight agencies, Division 5 of the FBI, Counterintelligence, and the Defense Intelligence Agency. The Defense Industrial Security Command has always been kept secret because it acts, in addition to its two official control organizations, on behalf of NASA, the Atomic Energy Commission, AEC, the U.S. Information Agency, USIA, and the Arms, Equipment, Ammunition, Munitions, and Related Miscellaneous Supply Manufacturing Corporations, contracting with NASA, the AEC, USIA, and the Pentagon. In addition, the syndicate's controlling interest in many of the defense industries allows it to play a major role in the operations of the DISC. It was, incidentally, to a Swiss-based corporation and DISC subsidiary, Permandex, that French intelligence traced the funding for the assassination attempts upon French President Charles de Gaulle in the early 1960s. Even in such respected European publications as France's Le Monde, connections were drawn between the revolting French-Algerian generals who conspired to murder de Gaulle and their NATO-CIA contacts who were connected to the Defense Industrial Security Command. I would interrupt again. A popular film called The Day of the Jackal represents a fictionalized account of some of those attempts. Continuing. The connections between Watson's statements and evidence concerning Permandex and the DISC often refer to specific geographical locations involved in the travels of James Earl Ray, as well as to individuals drawn into the picture. One of Ray's lawyers, as a case in point, later admitted to having been a CIA contract agent as well as being associated with the FBI. Furthermore, this lawyer was connected to CIA preparations for the Bay of Pigs operation and was associated with a Florida corporation which progressed from being a CIA cover group to being completely taken over by Permandex in its preparations for the assassination of John F. Kennedy, according to Torbett.